Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf. He is Gavin Shaw. We are talking, of course, today about the draft lottery. It's tonight. We're going to be in attendance at Slattery's Midtown Pub at 7:30 tonight watching the draft lotto, and we hope that you guys come to join us. But first, we have a cool show in store for you guys to listen to today.
Yeah, Alex, on today's show, we are going to break down what the Knicks would do with each pick if they land at 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. We have you covered on every possible scenario next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox fouled from behind, counting at one. Chrisdale
punches his fist. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
All right, we are here, Locked On Knicks, ready to rock on lottery day. We're going to break down some scenarios today. If the Knicks get pick 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, what they could potentially do, what we hope that they do, all that good stuff. First, though, of course, I should mention again, tonight we have a draft lottery watch party. We're doing this in conjunction with Posting and Toasting, naturally, the blog that I write for, Knicks Fan TV, Knicks Film School, Gotham Sports Network, the Nick of Time Show, and the Hard Knicks Life Podcast. Whole bunch of your favorite Knicks content creators all in one place at one time. We're going to be drinking and giving to a good cause because 10% of all drink sales will benefit the Garden of Dreams Foundation. And we're also going to be raffling off a signed Kevin Knox jersey and doing a 50-50 raffle throughout the night as well. So this is all going down at Slattery's Midtown Pub at 8 East 36th Street. Of course, that is tonight. Before the draft lottery, we're saying get there around 7:30, but feel free to roll in whenever you feel like it. Of course, you want to be there when the actual results of the lottery are revealed, and that should be around 8:30 to 8:40. So definitely make sure to get in before that because you don't want to miss the big moment. Or maybe you do want to miss the big moment and you just want to show up for the drinking afterwards. No worries. It's not like we're going to dissolve everything at 8:40 once the next pick is revealed or whatever. So feel free to show up afterwards as well if you just feel like drinking the herd away or celebrating with us. So, but we certainly hope to see you there ahead of time. Of course, we've mentioned this on other shows too, but Gavin, you and I will get to meet one-on-one, face-to-face for the first time, which would be pretty sweet. And anybody who's interested could meet and chat with us together.
Oh, wow. It's gonna be a monumental moment. I know personally – we're recording this Monday night, right after we finish up, Alex. I'm going to go over there, make sure I get a good spot, maybe put out like a little bit of a tent, like a sleeping bag or something, personalized Knicks blanket, and just kind of crash there overnight. And then just sort of like maybe like go and like meditate throughout the day and just think about Zion and just I think I'm going to get some Zion jerseys, like maybe burn some Zion like seance, I don't know, some Zion candles perhaps. I'm gonna make it happen. I got this, I think.
I think we've got the new campaign here. It's pitch a tent for Zion, right?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I'm hoping for just a line outside the bar of tents, and they're gonna hope just furious with us when we come in.
Can you imagine? Oh man! All right, we're gonna get the t-shirts printed for tomorrow. We're having for sale called "Pitch a Tent for Zion." This is our rallying cry now.
Jokes on me.
I've been pitching a tent for Zion for at least 6 months now. So
it's been the unofficial logo of this show. We haven't said it yet.
Yep. we're ahead of the curve here. At any rate, Gavin, of course, tonight we've got the draft lottery. Hopefully the Knicks get number one and Zion, and we can stop pitching tents for Zion and just be happy that he's a Nick. I mean, maybe that would mean pitching more tents for Zion.
Yeah, I don't think at that point if they get Zion.
But anyway, so let's talk first about what the Knicks can and then should do if they get the first pick. Why don't you tell us the most obvious option?
That is, they will take and keep Zion Williamson and keep those tents up because he is going to be I think from day one would be the most exhilarating player in I'll say recent Knicks history, because I don't want to insult the history buffs who got to watch Earl the Pearl Monroe and Clyde. But I can pretty safely say in the last 30 years or so of Knicks history, they will not have a more exciting player than Zion Williamson. So you get the number one pick, you take him, you keep him, case closed. Or you could trade him for Anthony Davis, Alex, which is a prospect that a lot of Knicks beat writers have brought up in recent days. I saw Mark Berman had a whole big article on it, and how it's sort of shaping up that, I mean, clearly if they got the number one pick, but even if they got two or three, like the Knicks might have a collection of assets that the Pelicans are most interested in of any team in the league. So it is seeming more and more real that there will at least be a conversation between those two teams, almost regardless of where the Knicks end up, but obviously, especially if they get the number one pick.
Yeah, first off, shouts to Mark Berman, because I got to be the lead quote in a Berman article today. That was like a life achievement unlocked. Like that, I had like the little like Xbox thing, you know, flash under my eyes for a second there. It was like life achievement unlocked. Mark Berman quoted you in an article. I was like, oh, that was dope. Because we talked on the phone. He was interested in the meetup. And so we talked about it a little bit. And my quote got to be the first one over JB from Knicks Film School and Andrew Claudio from Gotham. So shouts to me.
Big win for Locked On Knicks.
Yeah. Big win for Locked On Knicks and Posting and Toasting today. So score one for Alex Wolf. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, the whole AD thing has definitely been floated a lot. I personally think, you know, and I think I've expressed this on the show a number of times now, because we've, you know, God knows we've discussed this enough throughout the season and since the season's been up. But I think I'm probably of the mind of, you know, even in a straight up trade, just because of the value that I think Zion's going to be able to provide and the day one impact that he should have is like one of the most polished prospects probably in the last like 20 years or so. I think it's definitely worth keeping him, you know, for the talent, the potential longevity, and for the cost savings, where he's only going to cost, you know, about a third of what Anthony Davis is going to cost over the next 4 years to keep on the team, which I think is definitely something to keep an eye on if you're, you know, trying to hit free agency this offseason. That'll, you know, keep more space available this offseason. And then in future offseasons, it'll, you know, help keep you under the tax level and stuff like that, which gives you more money to play with every offseason. But yeah, the trading for AD thing is definitely intriguing. I don't know if I necessarily love, like, the Berman piece that you mentioned. He talked to Bobby Marks, who is a former Nets assistant GM that now works for ESPN. And he had said something like the starting price point would probably be something like, or a deal that would probably get it done, I think was his words, was Zion, Kevin Knox, Frank Ntilikina, and both of the picks acquired in the Porzingis trade from the Mavericks. And to me, that's, I mean, I literally just said, like, I don't know that I would trade Zion straight up for Anthony Davis. And if the price was Zion, Knox, Frank, and the two firsts from the Mavericks that could potentially be valuable in a few years, I mean, I'd probably say forget about it. I'll just take my chances with Zion, pair him with whatever free agents this offseason. And, you know, even if you don't get Durant or Irving at that point, like, I feel pretty confident just with him as my franchise centerpiece going forward, and that he'd eventually become a draw to free agents just by himself.
Yeah, I guess the one counter argument to that is if you get intel from Kevin Durant that him coming is contingent on Anthony Davis being there, and I'm not sure how likely that is, because obviously the guy he's been more linked with is Kyrie Irving. Though on paper, if you get Kevin Durant and Anthony Davis, and I mean, this is a bold assumption. I mean, we just saw KD strain his calf, and obviously Anthony Davis tends to get hurt quite a lot. But you get both those guys, and they're both healthy throughout a postseason. To me, that's a very, very good shot at an NBA title. You could make an argument you have the two best players in the league, and I wouldn't necessarily go that far, especially with, I mean, AD sitting out this year. It's kind of hard to gauge, but you could make a case for that. And that's, I mean, as valuable as Zion is, and as good as it is to have the guarantee that he's going to be there for 4 or 5 years, where AD theoretically, if something went horrifically wrong the first season, you could lose him right away, and then you traded away your whole future for nothing. The upside of pairing those two together is just enormous. And I mean, the fact that AD is still so young, and I do think there is a little bit of risk like baked into Zion. Like, I mean, like worst case scenario, like he's a very, very good starter that is ultra exhilarating. There are people who know a lot more than me that will tell you the worst case scenario for him is an all-star. But I don't know. I think there is, maybe I'm just playing devil's advocate, but I think there is a case to be made for Anthony Davis. And I guess it is somewhat contingent on what Kevin Durant tells the Knicks.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm kind of in agreement with you. I think if you hear through back channels that Durant is like, I don't want to play with Zion, get me Anthony Davis, or I'll sign with, you know, Team X. Like, I'll sign with Brooklyn, I'll sign with the Clippers or the Lakers. The Lakers will be weird. Because yeah. Durant has publicly said that he doesn't want to play with LeBron. But, I think then I guess you would do it just because I feel like you're right. Like, that Durant and AD pairing is so, you know, potentially insane. You know, even if then that kind of, like, makes it harder to go after another max-level free agent and you have to kind of settle with filling out the roster with maybe someone who takes a little less than max or something. I still think it's an intriguing option to go after, and especially one that, like, if that's what it takes to get Durant here, I would do it, because then you have two top five players. Like, I know people are like, it's the same thing like what happened with Kawhi last year. I think, like, people are sleeping on AD now at this point, because he didn't play most this year and he missed the playoffs and stuff like that. Like, people are, I think, like, ousting him from the whole top five player conversation. But I mean, last year there were people that did the same thing with Kawhi Leonard, and look where he's at now. And, you know, AD definitely has a kind of impact like Kawhi on games, and he's never played with anybody even close to as good as KD. So it would definitely be, I mean, that would be a scenario where I'd do it, probably begrudgingly. I'd be like, come on, Durant, like, you can't see the appeal of playing with Zion, like, look at this kid. And he'd be like, no. And I'd be like, all right, fine, like, I'll cave. Yeah. But
it brought up something on Bill Simmons' podcast today that I don't actually believe, but I thought was kind of funny. The idea that KD wouldn't want to come to New York because he would be in, like, Zion's shadow right away, just because Zion is, like, so obviously loved, which, like, I don't actually think is true, but I just think it's kind of funny that, like, the idea that KD would, like, even think that is interesting. And I do kind of wonder if, like honestly, like hypothetically, like, the basketball gods deem the Knicks, they say the Knicks have suffered enough. They say, you've been in hell for 20 years. We're going to take you out of it. They get Zion. They get Kevin Durant. Who would be the more, who would sell more jerseys? Like, who would be the more beloved guy next year? Because Zion, there's just been so much hype building for so long. And I feel like, weirdly enough, people have almost taken Durant for granted in a way. They're like, oh, he's coming. But, like, we have a 14% chance at Zion. And he's just, like, so, his game is just so inherently entertaining and thrilling and, like, made for TV, made for the garden. Like who do you think would be more beloved next year? Which I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself considering they might get neither of them, but just interesting question.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was actually just about to say the same exact thing. Like, when you said the thing about, you know, Durant maybe not wanting to be in Zion's shadow, which seems ridiculous, but, like, no, it's legit. Like, I think the biggest thing would be, especially, like, if the Knicks struggled at all, Zion would get a full pass and would still be beloved. And Durant would be the one to take all of the heat if that was the case, because he's the established guy. And I guess that would sort of be different for him, because, like, with the Warriors, for example, like, if anybody takes heat, it's usually actually the supplementary players, because everybody just acknowledges how good, like, Durant and Curry are. And it's like, well, I think Draymond Green is the problem this year, or, like, I think Klay Thompson is the problem this year. And Durant, if he were here with Zion, would be, like, the one that everybody would be, like, shooting daggers at if the Knicks weren't doing well. But then I also think, like, I don't know if it would necessarily reflect in jersey sales, although I think they would be pretty damn close to one another. But definitely, like, from a fan support standpoint, I mean, Zion would be, like, the baby. You know what I mean? Like, that would be, like, it would just be like, I don't know, like, I don't know. It would just feel, well, no, more, I, like,
I think he cut to the heart of it. I mean, I think Zion would be pretty, unless he was like really awful, like he would be pretty much like criticism proof. And like the second things go bad, like if the Knicks like lose three games in a row, you know, Durant is like getting shit in, like he's like on the back page of the Post and like with some like stupid headline, like Durant choker or something. And, yeah. And I think Zion would avoid the brunt of that. And Durant would, yeah, I mean, he's like, this isn't even like criticism of him. Like it's human nature. Like he definitely notice that and probably be like a little bit annoyed by that.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. I mean, it's whatever. Like, I want to be talking about this again in July. Let's put it that way. Like this is like a really first world basketball problem right here is if we would get those two guys and it would be a fight to see who's our favorite, you know, the top two player in the world or the, like maybe best young asset in the NBA, from the second that he steps on an NBA court. So it would be a pretty good problem to have, but yeah, I definitely think, you know, like I said, I think Durant would be the lightning rod for sure. I don't know who would ultimately end up more beloved though. It would probably just depend on like who, if the Knicks would be as good as advertised and make it to the finals or something. And like, God forbid they won a finals, like it would kind of, I feel like whoever won that finals MVP or whatever would be the fan favorite for like that particular season. But like going forward, it would always be Zion's like race to lose pretty much because everybody would want to love him so much because he'd be like that first, like hopefully first homegrown superstar to stay with the Knicks like forever, which we're still looking for, still searching.
I love how much we're indulging ourselves, but it's still, I can't get over the fact that it's only a 14% shot. Like I feel like I'm so committed. We spent so much time talking about it. I'm so like part of my mind thinks he's already on the team.
Well, we should relish this discussion because
right,
it's probably
right. That's a better approach.
This could potentially, there's an 86% chance this is the last discussion that we're going to have about Zion Williamson as a Knick. So
yeah, that sucks. Oh, hope he comes. Hope they do it. All right. With that, we wrap up segment one. When we come back, we're going to break down what the Knicks would do with pick two or three. That next on Locked On Knicks. Welcome back into Locked On Knicks. We are mourning on the podcast because we might have just had our last conversation ever about Zion Williamson as a Knick. Or alternatively, we might have had about the 50th in what will eventually be thousands of conversations about Zion Williamson. I choose to believe in that world. Before we get into picks two and three, though, we wanted to tell you about the best way to hire, and that is hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. An application comes in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match.
Not only that, ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOCKEDON. ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, and with that, let's get back into our conversation. Picks two or three, Alex, and this is an area that we really focused on when we were lucky enough to get a couple of draft experts on the podcast. In case you missed those, go back and listen to them. We had Jonathan Wasserman with Bleacher Report and Ricky O'Donnell over at SB Nation. Both of them came on. They were both great. And I think we got two parters out of each one. So if you're at home or even if you're at work and you don't have the highest leverage or the most high intensity job, maybe throw those headphones in, go back, go through all four parts and get totally primed for the draft lottery tonight. Or if not, you're doing yourself justice by listening to this one because we're going to go through it all again. So the obvious debate at picks two or three, more so at two because three, you'll likely only have one of them available, is Ja Morant versus RJ Barrett. And it's so interesting when it comes to the Knicks, because on paper for your average team, you have equal need at both positions. I think it's pretty clear, at least in my mind, that Morant is the better prospect. And I think that's been the consensus amongst the draft Knicks, Alex, in recent days and weeks, that Morant has pretty clearly separated himself from Barrett. the issue for the Knicks, or I guess the first world basketball problem, as you phrased it last segment, is if they get a commitment from a Kyrie Irving type or even a Kemba Walker, theoretically, to come in and be the point guard for the Knicks over the next 4 or 5 years, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to invest the second pick in the draft in a point guard. So all that considered, Alex, where are you at right now if the Knicks land at number two? What are you thinking? What's your methodology? Does it just entirely come down to what you know about what's going to happen in free agency?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like technically speaking, the Knicks should not know at that point who they're getting, but we all know that that's bullshit and that they'll probably have a good idea of who's going to be signing. Still though, like, I think because it seems like in NBA circles and, you know, along, you know, with smart draft people and all that, that Morant seems to have established himself as that number two guy, even if he's like a number of pegs below Zion. Like, there's no shot that like Morant is even in consideration for number one. It's a runaway race for Zion, but the fight for two was pretty interesting. And it seems like Morant has gained a little more of an edge now. I feel like personally, I would probably just go best player available regardless. Take Morant, even if you know through back channels that Kyrie's coming, take Morant and make it clear, like, you know, push it through those back channels and be like, look, Kyrie, like this isn't like us saying that we don't need you. This is us taking the best possible player. And, you know, we're probably going to trade him. Like, cause once your name's on the dotted line, like he becomes superfluous along with, you know, Dennis Smith and maybe even Frank Ntilikina, although Frank has at least defensively a little more, utility of being able to guard like at times 1 through 4 that those other two guys definitely don't have. But Morant, you know, for sure, it would be superfluous in the same way that Dennis Smith would, because both of them seem like they're made to be like lead guards at their best selves, and they would only be able to come off the bench if there's a Kyrie Irving on the team, and you couldn't really play them together with Kyrie, because neither one would be able to defend all that well. So, but still though, I think my choice would be to still take Morant, because there's a chance, like, with the Knicks roster as presently constructed, that you could possibly still put together, say, an Anthony Davis package or a Bradley Beal package or something like that with Ja Morant if NBA executives are, you know, high enough on him around the league. So that's kind of the direction I would lean, I think. Sorry, that was a little long-winded, but I got a lot of thoughts on this matter. I've been thinking probably way too much about this sort of thing lately.
No, I think that's generally the direction that I lean to. I guess my only question is, like, does Morant still have the same amount of value? Like, if you couldn't play him, or I guess, like, you might even be saying, like, just trade him, like, even before the season starts, like, once the contracts are signed and once you've signed Morant to a contract and move him on. And then the question is, like, can you, like, get equal value for him instantaneously? And, like, that's impossible to answer, because the whole premise of getting equal value for a draft pick is knowing what they're going to be. And when you're betting on potential, like, you might be grossly underselling, or he might suck and you might be getting an incredible deal for him. It just, like, I mean, on the surface, like, it doesn't really, like, sit great that, like, the Knicks, I mean, like, you tanked your way all the way to the worst record, and then you immediately have to trade that asset for presumably a piece with less upside, though I guess, again, the one scenario where that's not necessarily true, and I'm going to present a second to you after, Alex, is if you think Morant could potentially get an AD deal done, and obviously not having the number one pick, not having Zion in there changes the equation a little bit. Presumably you have to throw in Mitchell Robinson along with Knox and both Dallas picks. Maybe you can make a case that you need Trier in there too. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we spent, like, pretty much the whole first segment, like, breaking down the Anthony Davis scenario. But just on a surface level, do you think a package centered around Morant, Mitch, and those Dallas picks would entice New Orleans?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it would. I mean, if you look at the Knicks competition, you know, for a potential Anthony Davis suitor, you got, like, the Celtics, who the Celtics, like, war chest of picks, depending on what happens with the Memphis pick, their pick, you know, cash will pretty much be spent, after this draft. So they won't have all those extra picks that they once had. The Lakers, I mean, I gotta be honest, I don't know what their pick situation is, but knowing how the Lakers have been operating the last few years, I can't imagine that they have very many extras, if any. They probably, what's that?
They just have their picks.
Yeah, they just have their own. Okay, good. So, I mean, you know, the Lakers, like, it's pretty much all going to be, they could offer some of their own picks, but it's mostly going to be their young players. So then it's like, you start weighing, like, okay, the Knicks can offer a couple of first round picks, like, for sure, without harming themselves. So, like, potentially you could even give up the two Dallas ones and maybe even one of the Knicks' own picks. And then you can put in three first round picks that a lot of other, you know, teams probably wouldn't feel comfortable with. And then, you know, Mitch, I think you could argue is as good of an asset as almost anybody in the league, like, as far as young players go now. You know, obviously, like, Tatum is good for the Celtics, or like Ingram and Ball for the Lakers. Mitch is like kind of a different animal because he seems like he's going to be like a defensive, you know, anchor for pretty much his whole career, and where his offense goes is anybody's guess. But yeah, I think, you know, the Knicks could, if they had Morant, Mitch, and 2 to 3 first round picks, and especially if you throw in Knox as well, I mean, that's pretty damn good. I don't know how much better they could possibly do, you know, compared to the other teams that could potentially make a bid on Anthony Davis. Or like I said, even, you know, scale that offer back just a tiny bit and you could be in play for maybe someone like Bradley Beal or some other, you know, like all-star level player, if not like top five in the league level player that you could pair with, you know, hopefully KD and maybe Kyrie or something.
Yeah, Morant and picks for Beal is pretty interesting, especially given how good Beal was at the end of the season. I don't know. I mean, the Wizards wouldn't be particularly inclined to do that, I guess, because of John Wall being there for 4 years and him being impossible to get off of. But if they want to do a total rebuild and just eat a salary, like maybe that's potentially interesting for them. I'm not sure. I think it's a good conversation. I guess just from your perspective, would you be more interested in trading away a package like that? It doesn't include Zion, but does include having to give up Mitch and obviously the rights to Morant.
I think I would, like, if we're talking, like, Anthony Davis, like, I don't think you would have to give up Morant, picks, and Mitch to get someone like Bradley Beal, because I just don't, you know, if you look at what players like Beal have gotten back in various trades, like, the Paul George deal at the time, obviously Oladipo turned out so good, but at the time that deal was like, a lot of people thought that the Pacers could have done better on that deal. Trying to think, there's what's another deal where someone got traded like that recently? I had another one and I just blanked on it.
I guess Kawhi,
you could say. And I mean, Kawhi is definitely a much better player, and they only traded DeRozan and Poeltl and first round pick, and yeah, that was more or less it. So you know, there's definitely, like, there's a case to be made you wouldn't have to go that crazy to get someone like Brad Beal, but if it came down to it, to get back to the original point, if it came down to it and they had to give up, like, Morant, Mitch, and picks for AD, as long as you had, like, a reasonable commitment from Davis that he would re-sign with the Knicks in the, you know, the coming offseason, I'd probably make that deal. I think that would be one I'd be comfortable making. Is as painful as it would be to give up Mitch. Like, AD's, like, you know, idealized Mitch, basically.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I think you have to do it. All right, but an alternative scenario is, would you be interested in trading for a Ben Simmons type? Because at least because of his size, he would theoretically have a little bit more utility playing next to a Kyrie Irving. And, I mean, I don't really have a great gauge on where things are going with Philly. Like, if I had to guess, like, I think they'd probably want to keep Simmons for at least a couple more seasons, and just, I mean, because he's sort of like the last guy standing along with Embiid in terms of what the process produced specifically in regards to homegrown talent. And he's still someone that I think it's pretty easy to see, like, even if people are down on him in the moment, just still has an immense amount of upside, is still ridiculously young, is probably going to be the most dangerous open court player in the NBA for the next couple of seasons. So he's, I mean, I guess with Zion coming in, you can make a case that's shifted a little bit, but he's definitely in that conversation. And I think he's getting a little bit undervalued as an asset. These people just love, like, piling on with him, and it was sort of easy for him to get lost in the shuffle of, like, Philly's, like, mega team. And he never really got a fair chance, you could say this about everyone in Philly, to assimilate within that group, because they only got 20 games together before they were sort of just thrown into the blender of the playoffs. So all that is to say, I think now's the time to kind of buy low on him And the Knicks might have a prime opportunity if they land the second or third pick and want to build a package around that. But what do you think about going after someone like him, or do you just think his lack of shooting would just be too much of a negative if you're going to play him with two other superstars?
Let me be clear. Like, and this can apply to the second or third pick. Pretty much this whole discussion can apply to the second or third pick, because I consider, at least to me, I think Barrett and Moran are pretty similar as far as a tier of prospect. But, like, there's, like, zero question in my mind. If you could call up Philly on draft night and be like, I'll give you Ja Morant or RJ Barrett, you know, whatever, second or third pick, in exchange for Ben Simmons, and they're like, yeah, I would not let them get off the line. I would, like, immediately patch the league in and be like, please finalize this. They said yes. Like, that's a ridiculous deal. I mean, Ben Simmons is an all-star, and he's an underrated defender, I think. There is some questions about, you know, his shooting and how much that limits a team or whatever, but, like, if you have an idea that you're getting Kevin Durant and possibly Kyrie Irving already, and you can get Ben Simmons on the team, like, fuck yeah, you do that. Like, that's so easy. Like, Ben Simmons, I think you'd be lucky if RJ or Ja Morant turned out to be even close to as good as Simmons is right now. And if you, you know, maybe getting him on a new coaching staff that'll actually, like, light a fire under him and be like, hey, Ben, you know, yes, you do have to practice 3-point shots. Like, that's a thing that we're going to require of you. And if he could get serviceable from there, like shoot like 30% or something, like just enough to keep a team honest, he'd be ridiculous. I mean, that would just be such a good combo, because he wouldn't even really need to shoot all that much with, if you had, like, in theory, Kyrie and Durant with him. I mean, that's the shooting that you need around him, period. And that's it. And then, you know, he could just handle the ball, drive and attack and kick out to people and throw lobs to Mitch. I mean, it would be a beautiful thing to say. 100% I would do that. And I don't know how anybody could say no to that deal.
Yeah, I guess I should have done a better job setting it up. I think you would have to give it more than the pick. Like, maybe, like, the pick, both Dallas picks, and then, like, one of, like, Knox or Trier, just because he is still, like, I mean, for all, like, the playoff failures, like, there is a reason, like, he got, like, the mini LeBron hype, and, like, he didn't really, at least on a surface level, like, he didn't seem to make, like, a dramatic jump from his rookie year to his second year, and, like, the fact that he still can't shoot jumpers. But I don't know. I just think the baseline of his talent is such, like, you would, and this draft is, like last year, I think you could make a case, like, if you had Ben Simmons in this current situation, like, you could have almost definitely, I think, traded the third pick for him. He's, like, essentially, like, doing Luka for Simmons. Like, even Luka as a prospect, I think it's something Philly would have considered last year. But in this year's draft, I don't think there's anyone that's obvious enough that, like, I think you'd have to throw in some of those supplemental pieces. The good news is, like, they wouldn't really have any desire for Mitch with Embiid already in place. So that kind of gives the Knicks an out, and they could just do, like, the pick, Trier, Knox, or Ntilikina, if they like Ntilikina more, and, like, two first rounders. And even then, like, I don't know if Philly would bite on that, because it seems like they're pretty committed to winning now at this point. And, like, even with Simmons, like, lack of fit, next to Butler and Harris, like, he's still more conducive to winning than, like, even, like, getting all those different pieces from the Knicks. And, like, who knows, like, how Embiid would react to them, like, signifying, like, that they're not really trying to win next year. So I guess I'm setting this up to knock it down and saying I'm not sure how feasible it is, but, like, maybe, like, Philly decides, like, this just isn't going to work. And, like, if Simmons is never able to shoot, he's just never going to be a fit with Embiid. And someone like Morant, who is far from a sure thing as an NBA shooter, but does seem to have some upside in that capacity, and is just so, so smart as a passer. He gives you a lot of what you lose from Simmons. Like, I don't know. Like, if Philly just falls in love with him, there might be a way to make that happen. So I think it's far from the likeliest scenario, but it is interesting.
Yeah, I'd probably, like, to your point about, like, what I would potentially give up, I would probably max out at, like, Morant, one of the Dallas picks, like, Knox, and then take your pick, Trier, Ntilikina. I think that would be about where I'd max out, because that's, like, that's three young players, like, one of which is only on the second year of his rookie deal, one of which would be on, like, well, Frank would be on the third year of his rookie deal, or Trier on effectively the second year. And, you know, Morant obviously on a 4-year contract. So that's, like, a lot of cost controlled assets, and Morant could potentially fit really well there, like, right away. Knox could as well, I think. And you could definitely make the case like Frank on a team with playoff aspirations, even just as like a defender who's only out there to defend, could have some value there. So yeah, that's about where I'd max out, but definitely interesting and definitely something that will probably bear some more discussing if the Knicks should get the number two or number three pick in the draft. Of course, there is also the chance that they could end up with the 4 or 5 pick. And we're going to take a quick break and then come back and discuss that horror show of a scenario. All right, welcome back into Locked On Knicks' third and final segment. We certainly hope you guys are listening to us on the Himalaya app. That's our podcasting app of choice. Lets you have sleep timers where you can listen to us talking you to sleep. Although hopefully not right now because it's interesting stuff. Although it's possible that the 4th and 5th pick are boring to you because, you know, that's like a horror show scenario. But
it is the most likely one.
Yeah, and also the most likely one. We should point out, before we get any further, the Knicks have about a 60% chance of ending up on the 4th or 5th pick. So everybody should be bracing themselves for this. But if that should happen, the Knicks have some options. We'll briefly touch on, what guys that they could potentially go after here. Gavin, why don't you give, your three guys that you would potentially want to take real quick, and then I'll give mine, although we're not going to spend too long on this since we've already had on, as we mentioned earlier in the show, Jonathan Wasserman and Ricky O'Donnell, who have given some great insight on this. And if the Knicks end up at 4 or 5, we'll certainly have some more draft guests on for you guys.
Right. And I think Darius Garland is my top option out of sort of the next group of guys. I don't know. I love shooting. And I think if you can get that at any point in the draft, and I think Garland, you're going to mention another guy that's in this mix, I think he's going to be the definitive best shooter in this draft. So I kind of love that. And I think that sort of makes him theoretically a better fit around superstars if you end up getting them. And then my next tier is sort of Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter and one of those two guys.
Yeah, and you know, I like Jarrett Culver a lot in this spot, like in the 4 or 5 range, because he showed some pretty impressive tools. You know, was scoring the ball. Obviously, was a big part of Texas Tech making it to the Final Four, and he's got a pretty diverse skill set. Underrated passer, and he's a wing, and he's like, he looks to be, I'm curious to see what his combine measurements are going to be this week, because he looks like he could be almost like 6'8 or 6'9 at this point, despite starting his freshman year at like 6'6. So if he's still growing and he could potentially turn into like a stretch 4 someday, he's going to be pretty lethal. Other than that, they're maybe a little bit outside of the range, but I think that they're good potential gambles. There's Brandon Clark from Gonzaga, who it just averaged a ridiculous, like almost 4 blocks per game this year, 1.5 steals. So, you know, about 4.5 or 5.5 stocks per game, steals plus blocks, which is like an absurd number. Really efficient scorer and, you know, kind of could potentially be a good, you know, modern big archetype. And then Bol Bol, who's really intriguing, 7'2", kind of reminds you of Kristaps Porzingis a little bit, the way that his game works, but probably a better shooter coming into the league than Porzingis was, because as much as we all love that skill of Porzingis's, his 3-point shooting didn't really get above the low 30s until last season, and Bol Bol looks like he could potentially shoot like 35% from 3 right out of the gate, but he's really tall and gangly and looks like he's probably going to get pushed around the paint, even in the more modern pace and space NBA. But, yeah, like I said, we didn't want to go too in-depth on this, because if you guys listen to the show, you know that we've already had some pretty in-depth analysis on these guys. And if they end up at pick 4 or 5, we'll be sure to get you much, much more analysis on these guys so everybody can feel, educated on the potential guys in that range. But for now, we want to kind of talk about some different scenarios that appeal to us. For me, at least, Gavin, I really like the idea of trading back, or potentially I might even go so far as to say that for the right price of like picks plus like maybe an established player that the Knicks can like roster right away, I would potentially trade completely out of the first round this year, just because of how weak this first round is perceived to be. I think there's, you know, obviously there's always diamonds in the rough and stuff, but if you can talk a team like the Clippers, for example, have a pretty large, cache of future picks, even if they're without their first rounder this year. They have a pick coming up in, I think, 2020 from the Heat, that is unprotected, which could be valuable if the Heat kind of blow it up anytime soon. They have, all their own picks going forward, and I think a whole bunch of extra second round picks as well. They're in like a really good place for draft capital wise, but they don't have their own first round pick this year. So I think, you know, that's a potential suitor where, like, if the Clippers fell in love with, say, DeAndre Hunter or something, as, you know, a team that themselves have aspirations of winning next year, and Hunter seems like a guy that you could slot into a winning team. If I'm the Knicks, I might just trade out of that spot, period. Save the cap room for free agency where you want to make a big splash and just kind of figure it out from there. And even though that would be kind of disappointing, like, initially from a fan perspective, you know, it would be like, you'd probably feel pretty good about it going forward with having, you know, if you manage to net like two future first round picks and plus the two Dallas picks you already have, the Knicks would probably have the most attractive cache of first round picks pretty much in the entire NBA if that were the case.
Yeah, I go back and forth on it because, like, on like a very like immediate satisfaction level, like I just want to see the Knicks like take someone, and I want to like get to feel good about someone for that night. And then even looking like a little bit further out, I guess like the argument would be like you want to maximize the talent around Durant from day one, assuming he's coming, and I guess like it does sort of come down to that. And if you think he's not coming, then maybe you're like, all right, let's just have as much flexibility as possible. Let's either if we end up at four or five and we love a guy like you think like Bol Bol or Darius Garland or even someone like who's rated a little further back like Kobe White is really going to be like excellent. And you think you could turn them into like the best possible asset or even like the best possible piece long term, then you take that guy. And if you're not feeling that good about it, then like I do think it's kind of interesting to trade back. I mean, not only for potentially having three, four extra first round picks down the road, but what that could mean in terms of a midseason trade, because you already have all these young pieces. You already have, I mean, we just spent like 30 minutes discussing it, like potentially the best package for Anthony Davis. You add in another two first round picks. Whether it's AD or the next superstar who becomes disgruntled, you have a collection at that point that with Boston falling off a little bit and maybe Tatum comes back next year and averages 26 a game, and that argument goes out the window. But you can certainly make a case you have the best group of young assets in the NBA. I'll give a shout out to the Suns as well in that category. But even being in that mix, you really do have a legitimate shot at the next available superstar. And if you sort of settled in the offseason, let's just say, and for some Knicks, from some Knicks fans, this would be the worst case scenario, but let's just say you ended up with a Kemba Walker and a Tobias Harris, you have a real chance to add in the next disgruntled superstar to fit around them into that space and still have enough young pieces that you have a pretty solid group around those three stars. So I certainly see what you're saying, Alex, and it's so hard to say anything definitively because who knows who the team is, who knows what the trade is, who knows where the Knicks even end up. But it is an interesting scenario, and it's one that I wouldn't totally rule out, though, and I want to hear your take on this. I just intuitively don't think the Knicks are going to go that direction. Like, I think they're going to be kind of inclined to keep the pick. But what do you think about that, just in terms of what the front office is thinking about right now?
Well, I think from an optics perspective, they wouldn't really want to do that just because they know that, like, the fans would be pissed and the media would have a field day. You know, if the Knicks tanked this whole season, had the worst record in the league, wind up getting the fifth pick and then trade it and don't even make a selection this year, I mean, forget about it. Everybody would be like, even if it was like a smart move, when you really look at it, people would be mocking the shit out of it, you know, and I don't think they would want to deal with all that, especially like you wouldn't want to be dealing with all that negative press right before free agency hits. When you have to, you know, you're treating this like the biggest, and it probably is the biggest free agency period that this team has ever seen outside of maybe you could argue 2010 when, you know, they mortgaged so much to create that space. This year, they haven't really mortgaged as much, I would argue, to get the space, but it's still, you know, they've cleared a lot of hurdles to clear this space and make a splash in free agency. And, you know, I kind of think that, they would get killed and it could potentially hurt their media, you know, standing, and then in turn their free agent standing if they were to do something like that. But I mean, also the, I guess the possibility exists that you could also trade down. I just don't know. Unfortunately, like most of the teams in the lotto this year don't have a ton of extra assets, which is a pain in the butt. Outside of their own stuff, obviously. I mean, I guess you could maybe talk some teams into making a deal where, you know, you trade down and you just get a few extra second rounders from them, or maybe a first rounder that's like protected, you know, over the course of 4 or 5 years or whatever. But if all these like Boston and Philly, transactions have taught us anything, it's that whatever you can get, even if it's a first round pick that looks like it's going to be protected for 5 years and turn into 2 second rounders or something, you should probably go for it, because every once in a while things don't go according to plan. Teams miss the playoffs. Those protections become moot, you know, whatever the case may be. And you end up in pretty good shape. So I guess I would just want to like keep an open mind. I guess that would be like my mantra with the fourth and fifth pick, like keep an open mind and don't be locked in to taking someone at that spot. Like definitely I would hope that they would be working the phones, see if someone's interested in trading up for the likes of like a DeAndre Hunter. And then maybe you take a shot on Brandon Clark or Bol Bol, you know, who could potentially be around at the 10th pick, you know, or whatever, and see what you can get there. Or even, you know, a Sekou Doumbouya or something like that. Just take a potential, you know, a guy with more potential, but, you know, a potentially way lower floor, you know, in exchange for some future draft compensation. I think that would just be something worth looking into.
Yeah, I'm with that. I agree. Like, just keep an open mind, because I think what you're getting at, and I mean, to me, like my big thing with this draft is like, once you get out of the top three, I would argue like probably once you get out of the top one, like there just aren't any sure things. Like it's just not like last year. I would, and again, I hate harping on this, because it's just a negative, and it's something like obviously the Knicks, there's nothing they can do to change it. But like last year, you end up at 4 or 5, like you're getting Trae Young probably, or someone pretty close to that caliber. Like you're getting like a really, really, really good player. And this year, like I don't think that's reality. Like I think you're going to be, if not lucky, like I think the baseline of what you should expect at the fourth or fifth pick is a decent starter. And that's good. It's valuable coming out of a draft, is even like any year. Like there's no sure things, but like I wouldn't be like so beholden to that. And I so agree with what you're saying. Like I'd hate for them to be like locked in at someone on someone at 4 or 5, because I just don't think there's a player that warrants that. So that's a long winded way of saying I'm in total agreement with you. And I think Alex, unless you have anything to add, I can go pitch my tent, light my Zion candles, and get ready for tonight.
Yeah, I'm ready to call this one quits. I gotta start crossing my fingers, you know, every possible way, cross my toes. I've got my Tracy McGrady jersey all ready for the meetup tonight. That's like I'm going to call it lucky. I acquired it last year. I wore it during the lotto at home, and the Knicks didn't fall back a pick, which was good. They held strong at their number 9 last year. So I guess that's a good sign. So hopefully they'll hold strong at number 1 this year. So I'm going to wear that. And I don't really have too many other superstitions or anything, but yeah, I'm just ready for this to be over with. Like I've been stressing about this for well over a week now, and really longer than that, but like seriously thinking about it like multiple times per day for the last week, and I'm beyond stressed, but hopefully we'll have a great time at the meetup tonight, and everybody will just be able to either celebrate together or console each other, and it'll just be a good time regardless of what happens.
Yeah, I hope the same. All right, with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. We're excited to meet all of you tonight. I really am. It's going to be a lot of fun. Until then, be good, and we'll talk to you soon with some special guests coming on in the near future. We actually have a loaded list of guests over the next week or two. I think only one of the three that I'm thinking of right now are confirmed, but I'm assuming we get two of these three guys on, and you're going to be really excited when you hear who they are. So we'll sign off, and we'll see you soon.